I'm Dorianne Wheel. Welcome to Thrive with Dr. D.
Different and unusual, but also probably one of the most well-known guests I have ever hosted on Thrive with Dr. D. Today, you're probably wondering why we are playing a well-known and beloved rock song called The Love of God as an intro to this podcast. Well, our guest today is none other than one of the world's most beloved and revered rock guitarist, Grammy Award winner, 15 Grammy nominations, 3 Grammy wins, sold millions and millions of records with various groups, including Frank Zappa and on his own, Steve Vai. It's such a pleasure to welcome you to Thrive with Dr. D. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Dory. It's so nice to be here with you.
Now, some of you might be thinking, you know, this isn't the usual guest that we have on Thrive with Dr. D. Steve Vai, we know and love for his music. Steve started with music. Steve, we want to hear a little bit of your history because it's a fascinating history. And the fact that you are playing different kind of music as well today, music that takes the form of ideas and thoughts and philosophies and ways of life, and that you have developed and that you're playing from the inside out, not only from the outside in. But before we go into that, I just want to say, Steve, first of all, to acknowledge you. The way that we met not that long ago through a beloved and mutual friend, he introduced us and I reached out to you for some assistance of a young lady who displayed, I think, quite exceptional talent and wanted to take her career further in song and dance and musical theatre. And what I want to say is that not even having met you or you having met her, the amount of time that you spent going through her material, the concern that you offered, the detail in response, was absolutely unusual, and that, as well as the content, said to me, you are dealing with a different and very special human being. There was absolutely nothing in it for you, but you gave up your time, your expertise, to somebody who you had never met in order to assist them on their career path, and you did it with such alacrity.
So, Steve, you've had the most illustrious career. Let's start, because, of course, that's how you know and love. With your music career, you were a rock guitarist, not initially with Zappa, but then, of course, joined the band. I think it was in the late 70s and early 80s. They must have been crazy, heady, amazing days with lots of stories.
Yes, that's one of the things that my career has manifested in abundance, a lot of great stories.
Sure.
But I was, I was a fan of Frank Zappa because when I was young, I was a teenager in the 70s. So I grew up on, you know, the music that my siblings were bringing in the house, and it was rock music. So I was into like Led Zeppelin and Queen and all these kinds of rock bands. But I was also into composition, and I started composing at a very early age. And when I heard Frank's music, he was combining all of that stuff. So I started to transcribe it, which means you write down the music just by listening to it. And Frank was very impressed with that. And I moved to California in 1980. I was 20. And I auditioned for the band, and I started touring with Frank Zappa when I was 20. It was fantastic. It was intense, you know, but it was great. Yeah.
So what we know is he was known, you know, if you read some of his history and the way that he wanted to make and embrace other musicians for his music, he sounds like he was quite a taskmaster, very, very exacting in what he wanted to do. It wasn't just anybody who he would invite to work with him. Must have been fairly rigorous at that time.
Well, you can only survive in a situation like that when you love the challenge. And usually Frank's musicians had something interesting that they could do on the instrument that was a little exceptional in an artistic kind of a way. And then he would take that and he would cultivate it and kind of use it through his music and stuff. But with me, with Frank, it was very exacting, absolutely. I mean, Frank definitely wanted to hear his music performed correctly. But it was fun, you know, because I loved the challenge. The challenge was a dream because it really pushed me. You know, that feeling of achievement is such a fulfilling feeling. And with Frank, you can get that when you work on the music and you get it to the point where you can play it to his standard. It's very fulfilling. So if you're up for the task, it's great. If you're not, you just won't be hired.
Sure. So, you know, our connotation, and, you know, there are a lot of people who have a mindset and have assumptions about that era in rock, and most particularly what it must have been like to be in the middle of it, as you were, surrounded by huge numbers of fans that would follow you and your concerts all over the world. You know, just adoring fans who would offer themselves to you and the band in all sorts of ways, every kind of way. It's kind of the connotation is wild, it's drugs, it's sex, it's rock and roll in the extreme, it's never going to bed. Yes, there's the music, which is exacting, but it's sort of the context. And we know, of course, so many of the eminent musicians blew themselves out or came to an unfortunate end way, way too soon. What was it like being immersed in a time where, you know, we were protesting against the Vietnam War? It was the counterculture, anti-establishment, young people's time, and the gods and heroes of the day were you.
Well, I think for some people we were. And it was, you know, when I was with Zappa, the music was so intense, but it was fun on tour. There was a lot of you meet different people, but I was very focused on the music. But when I joined David Lee Roth's band, David Lee Roth was a real bona fide rock star in the 80s with Van Halen. And that band was known for some serious debauchery. And when I joined Dave's band, that's when, you know, we toured the world, and we were doing arenas and very, very large venues. With Frank, it was more like theaters and stuff. But when I was with Dave, it just exploded. And the stories are pretty notorious. I mean, it was, I was fortunate because I never did drugs. You know, I never was attracted to drugs, and I never really drank, you know. So, and I was in a relationship, you know, that I'm still in. You know, I've been with my wife for over 40 years.
Wow.
But I was a very colorful fly on the wall. I mean, the antics that went on were extraordinary, and it was it was a learning experience, and it was just a lot of fun. And but the danger, the real danger, is when all of these things are available to you. Well, I mean, the money, the drugs are available, the sex, all of these things are available, but the one thing that's available to you that can perhaps create the greatest challenge, because it did for me, it was the ego. You know, because when you're in a situation like that and you're winning all the polls in all the magazines, you're on the cover of all the magazines, you're making a lot of money. People are telling you you're great. And the ego comes right in the back door and you start believing all the hype and everything, you know, and you start to create an identity for yourself. Because when I was started to win all the guitar polls around the world, at first it was just like, how is this happening? You know, this is kind of when is somebody going to pull the, you know, the sheet off? And yeah, you know,
is this really me?
Yeah. What are they seeing? Why is this? How is this happening? But it just grew and grew and grew. And then after a while, you start to feel, yeah, that's me. That's me. I'm the chosen one, you know. And like everything else in the world that comes and goes and comes and goes and comes and goes, so does fashions and trends and styles of music and styles of playing and this kind of thing. So in the 80s, there was a very big rock, 80s rock kind of a thing. But then in the 90s, it all changed. And the kind of thing I did, virtuoso guitar playing and all that, was kind of passé. So there was a sort of a shift in the music scene then. But then I just stuck to making music and touring. And I toured after that with a band called Whitesnake, which is was another huge band in the 80s. And but then my musical aspirations were just a little different. You know, I had a particular brand of music in my mind that I wanted to start doing. So, you know, around the 90s, early 90s, I kind of turned my back on all that stuff and I started making solo music. What I didn't realize then was that the solo music was going to be as well received in the guitar community as anything. I mean, it was another just absolute surprise and delight.
So, Steve, you're still doing that. I've heard some of your latest music. I've been privileged enough to hear something that you've been doing recently, even under lockdown. I've actually witnessed what your fingers looked like.
Oh, you're talking about Candle Power.
But the part that I'm interested in, because we're going to get to how you developed some of your ideas, and that you managed to recognize the kind of seduction and the danger of it on the other side. Still not sure how you managed to avoid some of that. Because it is so heady. I mean, sure, you had a relationship. But for a lot of people, that was just, I have a relationship. It's kind of incidental. They still got caught up in other relationships, you know, like one after the other and sometimes all at the same time.
Uh-huh.
It was all of that. But I'm interested in your personal development and your awareness. And the fact that you speak about a challenge from early on, the challenge of the music. You also alluded to loyalty, being with one person over this period of time, maybe not only loyalty, but the maintenance of deep connection. All of these kind of things, you know, are not usually characteristic of people in your world who do get seduced by the ego and the money and also the huge recognition. So I guess the question is, didn't you want to just step into it? What made you say there could be some danger in launching myself into this lifestyle? And how did you start developing some of the thought, idea, and direction of how you needed to live your life and what you want to share with other people up to today?
Well, thank you. I think we all have unique stories about our personal evolution, so to speak. And a lot of the story is revealed, I believe, later in life when you look back and you see how you were at various periods in your life and how you grew. That's when you can actually see those things in your life that really were paradigm shifts that change your perspective of yourself and the world. And those are the important shifts. Experiences in and of themselves may not do that, but as they build up, there are certain paradigm shifts that can happen. And I distinctly remember various times in my life. I grew up in I had a great childhood, two brothers, two sisters, great parents. My father was an alcoholic when I was young. And that caused a lot of problems, as we know it does. I was fortunate. He had quit drinking when I was 12. So I got to know a really wonderful man. They were very supportive. I think for me, I remember when I was very young, being very curious as to what the heck is going on. Like, what is life? I remember 6 years old standing out on my front lawn, looking up at the sky and saying, okay, what's going on? You know? And when nobody was telling me, as I got older, I really wanted to know. I just wanted truth, you know. And there was also in the background, I don't know what, you know, it's not uncommon that people feel stress. They feel certain things about themselves and about the world that can create stressful states of mind and this kind of thing. And I started to discover that. I think one of the things, it's just fear. That all boils down to some kind of fear, you know. But I remember when I was very young, you know, when you're young, you hear things and they stick. And I had an aunt that said when she said something like, people who become famous go insane. You know, I was a little kid and I thought, okay, now I know what I don't want. I don't want to become famous. And it actually was an issue. It started to scare me even the idea of working with Frank, you know. What you discover is it's just an illusion, though. You know, all of that kind of stuff, it's all just in the mind, you know. It's how you choose to look at things that determines the quality of your life and the quality of your experiences. But still, when I was 20, I went through a very difficult period. I don't know exactly what it was, but it was like a depression. It was a deep depression, you know, and it lasted for about a year and a half, and it was caustic, you know. I didn't know. I thought I was going insane. And it's interesting because everything in my life seemed to be going well. You know, I had a girl that I liked and a lot of friends. I had a good job. I was working with Frank at the time. But there was just this very heavy, I think all of the questions I had about life and everything had built up. And it reached this peak, you know, one night where I didn't know how I was going to go on. You know, because when you're in a state like that, it can be so intense, the suffering, that you start entertaining thoughts of oblivion, you know. And I was fortunate because at one moment, this thought came to my mind that said, well, that's not the answer. It doesn't make anything any better. As a matter of fact, it makes it worse. You have to figure this out in this life. And that gave me a little, it was like a little respite. You know, and then something very interesting happened for me. I mysteriously received this book in the mail, and it was called The Magic in Your Mind by U.S. Anderson. I was 20 years old, and at that time, I had no understanding of esoteric things, religion. I mean, I grew up a Catholic boy, you know, but never really always loved, you know, when I heard the words of Jesus, I thought it was great. But there was things that I was learning that in the Bible and stuff, just as a, you know, as you're growing up when you're Catholic, that just sounded crazy, you know. So it didn't really aid to my life so much. But what happened with that book when I got it, it was a godsend, because it was the first book, the first thing that I read that actually showed me that there's more to us than just our minds, you know, what we think we are. So I became fascinated with this book. And one of the things in the book that actually, I want to share this because this was a pivotal moment. This was a real pivotal moment in my life. And for anybody that's ever experienced hopelessness or just that feeling of depression, they might understand this. There was this phrase in the book, and basically it was about setting a subconscious kind of a message to yourself and to repeat. It's like a mantra, and you repeat it. And what it said was to repeat, I am becoming happier and healthier every day. That was the phrase. And when I heard that, when I read it, I thought, this is crap. There's no way. This is I couldn't even say it in my own mind. But then the suffering just got so bad, you surrender. You know, at some point you surrender. And when I did that, I said that phrase in my head, and I didn't believe it, but I was able to say it. And then after a while, something, this was a major pivotal moment, and I'm going to express it because it's reflective of something that's within all of us that's vital to discover. And what that is the power of your intention. Because there was a moment there where when I said that phrase, and then I stopped for a minute, and the thought came to me, okay, I am becoming happier and healthier every day. And then I thought, why not? Why not me? What's to stop me, really? It might be a one in a billion chance, but it's still one that could be true, that I can become happier and healthier every day. And when you're in a state like that, you're grabbing for anything that'll help you. And when I started to say this, interesting things started to happen, and they were internal feelings that, well, first I started, there was a relief from the panic attacks and the anxiety. And there was moments of euphoria. I couldn't understand it, but it was just the moments of like bliss. They would just go, and then they'd vanish. And I kept saying this phrase, and then I was introduced to this amazing metaphysical bookstore in Hollywood called the Bodhi Tree. And in this store, they had everything on spirituality, religions, everything, pyramids, numerology, astrology, witchcraft, Eastern philosophies. And this was like my dope, you know. I just started just devouring everything. There was things that made sense. It was mysterious. I was learning another perspective of myself besides the conditioned thoughts that I was taught growing up like everybody. And these were incredible revelations, incredible. And my state of mind completely shifted. I started to like myself, you know. I started to appreciate myself and appreciate what I was doing. And I became very I started to feel real happiness again, you know, just real joy. And that, I have to tell you, it's never stopped. And it's never stopped kind of growing. And there's been challenges, sure, because the biggest challenge, well, not the biggest, that depression was the biggest one. And I've never been back there. I mean, I see it for the illusion that it is, and it's a ridiculous thought even. Now, I know that sounds to trivialize that state of mind, and for people that might even be hearing this that are going through it, I don't mean to trivialize it, but I can see now what it actually is.
So, Steve, you know, when you talk about it, you realize what it is for what it was now. At the time, you know, even as you're talking about it, it's like you're both a participant and observer, you're in it, and you remember very clearly what it felt like, that helpless, hopeless feeling. But there was still a spark, a little spark inside that was waiting to be reignited. And it sounds, when you talk about it, that it's a mixture of awe and realization and excitement. And this is what you're wanting to let other people know about, you know, in a way that you do. Is that right?
Well, yeah. What I'm saying is that you had said there was a spark that was reignited, right? What I'd like to say is the spark never goes out in any of us. That spark is who we are, actually. What I discovered through, I'm known as a musician, and I absolutely love that function in life. I'm so grateful and appreciative that I just found my nut, so to speak. You know, I found my note. But what I focused on also quite a lot in my life is the study of spiritual principles and the self. And there was various phases and different discoveries from that point. And we're all on this path. Everybody, the path is different, you know, but it's so vital to understand this is what I came to understand was you're responsible for everything. You know, you're responsible for the thoughts in your mind. That's what I discovered, that and that I'm in control of them. Or I came to discover that I have the option to be in control of my own thoughts. Now, that sounds like a funny sentence, you know. I'll try to explain. That spark that you talk about, that spark, it doesn't have thought in it. That spark is the light of life. It's the light of your awareness. You know, it's the light that you are. You know, it's the thing that enables you to be. It's life. That's who you are. And that is as bright and as powerful and as infinite in me as it is in anybody. But it's covered up. It's covered up by these illusory thought patterns that we've inherited, and we've been conditioned to obscure this spark, so to speak, with negative conditioned thoughts that we've been led to believe are the way things are. And this is what causes fear in people. And fear is the only thing that can obstruct that spark. When that spark is bright in you, when it's really shining, you're in a state of joy. You're in a state of, you're free. You're in a state of appreciation. You are on a high, you know. Everything seems to be working. Your timing is perfect. All the people you're meeting, you're co-creating in a beautiful way. Challenges become opportunities, you know. You don't see challenges. So that's your spark, you know, that's your note. And everybody can relate to that with something in their life. Something even very simple that they do, where that you're just doing it and you're feeling good. So for me, one of the thing that I recognized is the only thing that can ever hold you back from being that beautiful light is the quality of your own thoughts.
What you're saying is so important and understandable. And what a lot of people are thinking is, how do we do it? How do we get rid of all the good, bad, right, wrong, should, shouldn't, mustn't, can, cannot? My mother said, I have to. Girls are. Men are like this. Yeah. You know, this is, we've been conditioned from the outside in. You say to get to that point of full potential, which is manifest by freedom, joy, creativity, connection, need to be able to deal with all of those layers. So my question is, how?
How? Okay. Well, it's important to first point out that you may be doing it. A person may be doing that in a small part of their life and one subject. You know, they may feel freedom. Their mind might feel very open, and they enjoy what they're doing. They're enjoying the moment. They're enjoying others. They're shining. But then they go to another subject or everything else is upside down. And some people, everything is upside down. So how do you? Okay. The first thing a person must do in order to find freedom, peace, real peace, their creative potential, their appreciation in the world, all of these things, love. In order to find those things, the first prerequisite is you have to want it. You have to want that. Most people don't want that. This is very obvious when you look in the world. A person may believe that they want that. If you find yourself watching the news and getting embroiled in political debates, you don't want peace. You know, and this is an elusive thing that the ego does. It leads you to believe that you need to be serious, okay? This is an illusion, and it leads to suffering. That's all there is to it. Until a person decides that they don't want that anymore, there is no how. They will have no access to the piece that actually is already there, that they could never actually separate themselves from. So that's the big dilemma, because the moment that you want it, it starts happening. That's how. Okay, so let's just say hypothetically, a person is in a state of mind that's it's a stressful state. First, you got to we have to realize that stress is an inside job that we create on our own. It's not because of anything that's happening in the outside world. It never is. It's always only ever your perspective of what's happening on the outside world that creates stress in you. This is, people don't realize that they have to blame. They believe that if that doesn't change, if those people don't change what they're doing, or if then I can't be happy, you know. Or, and they also believe that they have to change to make other people happy. This is a mistaken premise. You know, this is like the grand illusion. So anyway, let's just say hypothetically, you're happy in your suffering, because that's the state of most bickering, blaming. If you find yourself blaming, condemning, judging, labeling, any of these things, you're not in your right mind, and you're not in your natural state of being, which is one of peace, creativity, companionship. It's the opposite end of the stick. So let's just say you're suffering through anger, okay? You're watching something on TV, you're in a relationship, whatever it is, and you're in a state of anger for some reason. Anger is just another phrase for fear. Okay. Anything, there's actually only two thoughts you can ever think. One of them has its foundation in fear, and all of its children have their root in fear. And the children of fear are things like anger and hate and anxiety and blame, and even something as subtle as frustration or impatience. So this is a form of suffering whenever you're going through any. We don't realize it because the ego says, no, this, you have to fight. You have to be angry. If you're not angry, the wheels are going to fall off. You're going to be taken advantage of. You're going to be weak. That's what the ego, that's what the mind tells you. It's a lie, okay, because it's a lie.
Let's just look at what people are going through today. And loved ones are really, you know, not coming through this and so on.
Yeah.
How do you apply that? And what can you say to people who are living in the midst of an unprecedented pandemic that they never thought we would ever be in? When I say they, I say me as well, all of us, in this lifetime. You would have said this is a science fiction movie that doesn't have a chance of doing well at the box office because it's so far-fetched. And yet these are some of the realities, and we need advice. I'm asking for how you deal with that.
Yeah.
In a how, and getting into some of that feeling of freedom and joy that you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it almost sounds insulting to talk about peace and joy at a time like this. But it's vital. I'll do my best. What I was referring to about stress is thoughts that the way we feel is based on the quality of the thought we think. Our emotions come after the thoughts. Being concerned is fine. You know, it's absolutely appropriate to be concerned. To be in a state of fear is unnecessary. To kind of just break it down, I've spoken to so many people, and including myself in this, that have been going through this pandemic and discovering many things about it that I find great value in, you know. And the way that you help yourself in a pandemic is talk about the things with others that feel good to you. Talk about those things. Like, if I asked you right now, if I asked everybody listening right now who may be in a very, very compromised state because of the limitations of the pandemic, And it varies. There's some people getting wealthy from it. There's some people that are losing everything. There's some people that are cultivating their health from it. And there's some people that are dying. You know, there's everything in between.
I hear a lot about gratitude.
Yeah. Appreciation is the secret magic in the world. And because if you're in a state during this, we'll talk about the pandemic, and there's a lot of challenges. You're at home. You don't know how you got to get out of that room. There's just the people, everybody's closing in on you, you know, or the job, whatever it is, you can write a list. I would challenge anybody to sit down and start writing a list of some of the things that have been, that they could find appreciation in that were a result of the pandemic. Now, it would be very hard to find one for some people, but it exists. One thing that you can appreciate does exist. And if you focus on that, if you can hold on to that, the feeling of that appreciation for that thing. All right. For instance, for me, I've had my boys come over more than they used to, you know? So that's something I can really appreciate. I like that. And now but that's not enough. I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to say, you know, when they come over, we play pool. We talk about this. We do this. You know, it's actually really nice, you know? So this is how you do it. This really is how you do it. You have to change the trajectory of your thoughts. And then an interesting thing happens when you change your emotional scale. You have access to solutions, to effective solutions when your emotional equilibrium rises. And the way you rise your emotional equilibrium is you find things to appreciate. If a person was to actually just sit and write a list of their blessings, write a list of the things that you can find in your life that you can appreciate, this is the most powerful thing that you can do to change your entire life and the way the world looks to you. This will change the way you perceive the world entirely. But it's work. It's work. You have to have the, at first, it's almost impossible because there's no light. You know, there's so much suffering. And so I wanted to, let me just jump back because I wanted to finish the, how do you find the peace?
Yeah.
So you first have to want it. And usually people don't want it until the suffering becomes so great, they surrender and they say, I don't know. And I just want peace. I just want peace. I really sincerely want peace in myself. So that's like a real desire. If that's your true desire, it has to come. And the second thing that happens after your desire for it, you start seeing the obstacles to it. You start seeing the obstacles in your life to your peace. And those obstacles are only ever your perspective of the world, your perspective of things. You could sit with five different people and talk politics with them, and you're going to get very different dynamics. You can talk religion with them. You talk money with them. You talk anything with them, and everybody has these wildly different dynamics on various subjects, and you can see their entire being change, you know? So when you desire peace, you start to see the obstacles to it, and those obstacles are always only ever your own judgment on the world and your own life and yourself. They're judgments. When you start to see these things in your mind, you can start to see the illusion of them. And then you can separate yourself from them before you can even realize that you have an opportunity to make a choice. Otherwise, you have no choice. You're just rammed into the conditioned thought patterns that keep repeating themselves and showing themselves in your life. That's called karma. You know, it's just the repetitive old thought patterns that just keep showing up in your life. Do you ever meet people that say, I knew it wasn't going to work for me? You know, or I told you that relation. I told you that whatever it is, they justify their own unhappiness. And we do this. We all do this. We don't realize that we're doing it. So when you decide that you really want peace, you start seeing that this is what you're doing.
It's quite amazing that, you know,
I mean, selective evidence and sort of unconscious bias.
Yep.
You know what you're talking about, yep. That you see the world through the lens, and that some people would rather, or they don't know that they would rather, live unhappily ever after because it's predictable.
Yeah.
It's predictable. That's the meaning they've found. That's the box that they've got. That's the certainty. Stepping out of it, you know, there's a little bit of a risk. Even stepping out of it for joy, it's new. It's unknown. It doesn't keep you in the box. So I think that's what you're saying, is that when you really, really want it, you'll begin to step out, yeah, and experiment and question. And that awareness is like the first step to change. And the amazing realization that you had, and that you have every day, and that you share, is that I can be responsible. In other words, it's I have the ability to respond.
Yes. And the quality of your life is going to follow your response. Yeah. You just have to be able to recognize the ego that says, no, you. Here's the thing. I know this sounds crazy, but the one thing that we're afraid of most of all is love. We're actually afraid of it. We're afraid to show it. We're afraid to share it. We're afraid to even show appreciation in this day and age. That's any sign of affection is seen as some kind of sexual approach or these kinds of things. And the interesting thing is, if you can look in yourself and see how we judge who we give our appreciation to and who we give our hate to, this is going to be joined at the hips of the quality of your life. And the ego is going to tell you, your mind is going to tell you, that any sign of love or affection to humanity is a sign of vulnerability. It makes you vulnerable, makes you weak. That you're going to have to sacrifice something for your peace. This is an illusion. It's a lie. The only thing you sacrifice for peace is your own fear. And we'll take the pandemic. The way I approach it is just practical sense, common sense. Okay, there's a pandemic. What can I do? Okay, I'm wearing a mask. Okay, you know, I keep social distancing. Don't go out if I don't have to. Oh, it's on the rise. I'm going to stay home, you know, and okay, now I can go out. These are things that are just happening, right? They're happening to everybody. The freak out, the fear is just totally unnecessary. You can be concerned, but the bottom line is, if you lose your job, you can only figure out what to do when the time comes. And you will figure it out because you always do. Everybody, look, the evidence of that is in the past. How often have you lost things only to show that the loss is actually a pointer to move into a different direction? Okay, so that's a very, when that's on your mind, okay, there's a big change here. I don't really understand why, but I know that it means change. And then all of a sudden, because you found your emotional equilibrium and you're not freaking out and blaming everybody else and all of this stuff, the solutions, the most vital, valuable, creative, progressive, abundant solutions become more on your radar. This is so obvious, because if you're in a state of fear, you're not going to see those things. You have no access to them.
And then you start manifesting it.
You manifest things based on fear. When you're in a state of anger, you manifest things that are the children of anger. And by the way, that's what we teach. If you're in fear, you're teaching fear. Everybody has the ability to be strong. That's who you are. That's actually who you are. Do you know that your natural state of being is one of peace and abundance and creativity, co-creativity? You cannot avoid being co-creative with others. You can't. It's impossible. Nothing you touch, nothing you even touch or look at or engage in at all is possible without millions of other people who have contributed.
So, Steve, I almost feel that I really do feel that we kind of need to have part two of this. As you're talking now, I think that America is on the brink of something new.
There's a renewed kind of excitement and hope and belief and possibility and even probability that we're seeing now. And that what you're talking about is talking to me as one person, to you in terms of your journey. But you're talking to everybody. I think that you really are relating to the collective, individually and together, about this kind of generative probability and possibility and abundance and connection and inclusiveness that comes when you see it. You know, there's a beautiful saying is, oh, I'll believe it when I see it. I think you'll say, you're saying that if you see it, you'll believe it. You know, the other way around, kind of.
Yeah.
Once you start seeing it, and then start manifesting.
Yeah.
So it's so timeous, all of this. And, you know, I almost want to say to you, when is your book coming out on this? And as I said in the beginning, it's a totally different kind. Well, not so different. It's music that also talks to you, as your music always has, but very differently and in a complementary way. So, I mean, you are, you know, I want to share you as a gift. That's what I feel like. I want everybody to understand, have a slice of it.
Now I'm blushing.
And just to thank you so much for giving us this perspective of belief and knowing and abundance and most of all love. And sharing your story of how that impacted you, starting from a time where you didn't believe that that was possible and never letting go of it. It's inspirational to all of us.
Thank you. Well, you know, you asked, you know, when would I write a book, and I haven't. And, I mean, I haven't really thought of it. I've been offered many times. But everything that I'm saying came from people much wiser than me, you know, and they write great books. And people like the kind of books that I've read, well, it changes, you know, as you evolve, you different things, you're attracted to different things. But the last spiritual teachings that I've really embraced that have had profound impacts on my life were the teachings of Eckhart Tolle, Muji. There's a book called The Course in Miracles that's profound. And that might change too, you know. But thank you. And I just would will close by saying I absolutely understand the challenges. But I can assure you that you are in control. You're the boss of you. And if you want peace, if you want your power back from negativity, from fear, it's very simple. You just have to want it sincerely. You just have to sit with yourself and really ask yourself, what do you want? And once you decide that you want freedom and joy, you want, and this doesn't mean that you're not going to have challenges in life. Challenges are vital. They're very important. Seen through the eyes of fear, challenges are devastating, as is most things. So seen with fear, with no fear, challenges are opportunities. They become opportunities, and they're not so serious, you know, but they'll be there. They're necessary. They're necessary. So don't be afraid of them. But find your independence. Find your independence from the things that are happening in the world that you believe have power over you, because they don't unless you let them. So when you're turning on the news and you're hearing about this and you're hearing about that, you have to understand that you're the one that has the power to choose to decide to think what you want. And that does not mean to be irresponsible or to throw caution to the wind. No, matter of fact, your ability to be intuitive about the moves to make is sharpened. You know, when there's lack of fear, when there's focus, your ability to make decisions is empowered. It's empowered. And this is what we need. We all need this. And what you were saying about what's happening in America right now, and there's change coming, there's big change coming. And I think it can affect the entire world. And that change is going to be, it's going to be experienced by an individual based on what they think it's going to be. So if they're projecting a fearful change where we're all going to hell in a handbag, I would be bold to say that that person will attract themselves to situations in life that will be their hell in a handbag. Because you're going to attract yourself to it because that's what you're thinking. But when you see this change as a paradigm shift, and if you look, that's what's happening. Technology is right now is at a paradigm shift. It's in the next 5 years, what's going to happen is extraordinary. And all of these things are changing. And when your perspective is a joyful one about the change, then the experiences that you're going to attract yourself to through that change will be good changes for you.
Steve, thank you. Your perspective, your joy, your absolute knowing, which is beyond belief, it's just a knowing. You know these things to be true. Your reassurance of control and the ability to take responsibility, the recognition of the obstacle of the ego, gives us all tremendous kind of unity and hope. And I must say, it's contagious. It's contagious.
Yeah.
So, yeah, perhaps more contagious than any virus.
There you go.
So really appreciate you. You've given us a lot, not only to think about, but to live with and live by.
Thank you.
And Steve I, who's all the way in LA, in the middle of the night, talking to us here. Thank you so much for your message.
You. Thank you so much, Dory.
Thank you for your music, all of your music.
Oh, thank you.
And for what you do, you are. Okay.
Thank you for what you're doing here. This is very nice. This is very, I love your podcast. You're doing great.
Thank you very much.
And if there's any message that I could give any, you know, the people who see this is you're doing great. You're doing fine. You're really doing good. Look around you. You're doing great.
Thank you. This has been Thrive with Dr. D. Listen to this and then listen to it again. I think it's probably one of the most important messages that you can understand and internalize and will certainly act as a springboard for the beginning of the rest of your life. Thank you very much.
I'm Dorianne Wheel. Thanks for listening to Thrive with Dr. D, a Jackpod podcast.